welcome to another exciting episode of Constitutionally Correct. I am your constitutional evangelist, Randy Stufflebeam, and today we are going to be talking about this whole issue of gun control. Folks, if you've ever heard me for any period of time as a former Marine, you should know that I absolutely and unequivocally believe in gun control. And of course, that gun control is the slow, steady squeeze of the trigger. And as we Marines would always say, one shot, one kill. So we don't waste time. We don't fiddle around. It's all about business. But with me today, I have three co-hosts with me. First, I'll introduce is the one that you all know for quite some time now, who's been with me quite a little bit, is the Fluffy Bunny. How's it going there, Fluffy?
We're doing fantastic today out in gun control land known as Chicago, USA.
Yes, indeed.
The land where the Constitution does not exist and the Second Amendment is non-existent.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, it is the sanctuary city for illegal aliens and criminals as well.
Generally known as our governor.
Indeed. And, of course, I have with me today my good friend Dan Sheridan, who helped me get this whole broadcasting thing up off the ground. How's it going there, Dan?
That's good, Randy. Great to be with you again.
Hey, as always, my friend, it's great to have you here. And another guy who's relatively new to my circle of friends and brother at arms, Chris Shipler, who has done some pretty good research and has done a lot of blogging about this whole deal about gun control. Welcome, Chris.
Welcome. Thank you. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, before we get actually started into the show, one thing I do want to say out here today is I really want to thank the Liberty Works Radio Network folks. They have really, when I first even had an inkling that this is something that I would like to do, out of the blue, they called me and then gave me a medium from which to start launching the things that I think is important, the constitutionally correct concept of government, of all things. And strongly encourage you to check out the Liberty Works Radio Network website. If you Google it, you can find it. But LWRN.org, I believe it's the .org, and short for Liberty Works Radio Network. And they do broadcasting throughout the day. They have people like Alex Jones and the Institute on the Constitution folks, Michael Peruca's group, who Michael Peruca actually ran for president as the Constitution Party candidate back in 2004. So they do a great work. Join them, help them donate, because these programs are actually broadcast not only on the internet, but on live radio. There's about four or five, maybe upwards of six radio stations who are picking up these broadcasts, and people are able to hear it on their drive time home and so on and so forth. So check them out and take a look at it and see what you think. Today we are going to be talking about the issue of gun control, and of course that has been precipitated because of the mass murders done at a local school there in Connecticut. And of course, how could you not have heard about this mass tragedy? And so, you know, the things have really heated up. The debate is on about whether we should just take guns away from everyone and that would solve the problem, or if the other side of the coin is to establish a well-armed citizenry. And so we're going to take a look at these issues, and from the very first perspective, there's no better place to start than at the beginning. At the beginning where our founding fathers created the Second Amendment and why the Second Amendment was created, and to give us a little bit of insight into, you know, what was on the mind of our founding fathers and what was going on with all that, Dan Sheridan is going to present to us a little bit of background on that. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, the Second Amendment, people have been, first of all, in light of these tragedies, it's been a real shame to see how the president has put the focus on him and Congress. He's made this whole shooting in Connecticut be a focal point for himself and people like Chuck Schumer, whose only goal is to blame gun owners for these kind of tragedies. So let me get this straight. We had a government school, a government-educated young man on government-approved drugs who saw a government psychiatrist, and the problem is guns. That's what's been set before us here.
Let me interrupt you here just real quick, because one thing I need to mention to everybody who's listening, and I apologize. I'm not sure why Larry Pratt, this is supposed to be a Larry Pratt interview. I haven't heard from him, so I don't know if something has preempted Larry from being able to be here. For that, I apologize. I will get the information out to everyone. After we're done with the show, I will follow up and see what happened. And get the interview rescheduled with Larry. He said he would love to be on the show, so I'm sure something has come up to preempt his ability to be here. So I'm sorry for the interruption, but I just happen to think there's a lot of people listening into the show. We broadcast it everywhere that it was going to be an interview with Larry Pratt. And again, I'm not sure why he's not here, but this is important information, and people need to understand what's going on here. So sorry for the interruption, Dan. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Yeah, and so getting back to the idea with this with the Second Amendment, and throughout history, going back to biblical days, one of the things a powerful government, a powerful state, has always attempted to do is some form of weapon control, and that's for one reason, so they can control people. The Second Amendment was because everybody has a basic right, a God-given right of self-defense. The Second Amendment was not something that was put in place so you and I can have the right to go skeet shooting or hunting. It was meant for us to have the ability and our God-given ability to protect ourselves from violence. When the Constitution was written, the reason why police carry guns is because we have granted to them, we have vested them with powers that already exist in the people themselves. Every person has the right to self-defense. The police and the military are a corporate expression of that we give them for those powers. And so when you read through all of history and all the founding fathers, what's behind that amendment, James Madison, in the Federalist Papers, basically said something that would probably end him up in jail today, is that an armed citizenry, not a militia, the common citizen, is the greatest defense against a corrupt government. So the not only is armed for self-defense from an invader or somebody on the street even, because the amendment says to keep and bear arms. That means we should be able to carry them unconcealed if we like. And so it is the reason why that provision was written was for that basic reason. And the thing that's important to realize is that the Constitution doesn't give us this right. It recognizes that right that already existed before the Constitution was written. And the reason why the amendments were written, they have nothing to do with you and I as individuals. They were declaratory. If you read the introduction to the amendments, they were further, in the words of the author, they were in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers. They were restrictive clauses against the government, not against the people. And so when we have people like the president and Chuck Schumer and the other band of brethren whose sole goal is to take guns away from you, this is why that amendment was written, so that people like the president and Chuck Schumer couldn't take away our guns. And that's the long and short of it. And we can get into other issues, but
here's an issue, though, Dan. You mentioned, you know, going back into biblical times. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, Jesus wouldn't own a gun, you know. Well,
Randy,
actually,
before, let me interrupt. You interrupted me a second ago. Let me just say something.
Sure.
The Lord Jesus told the Apostle Peter, put thy sword in the sheath. He didn't say surrender it to the government.
Huh. Well, not only that, but if you go to Luke 22, 35 through 37, Jesus is speaking here. And this is what verse 36 says. He said to them, but now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag. And if you do not have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. So even Jesus believed in being well-armed, apparently.
Well, if you, you know, not knowing who our audience is, but as a Christian, we realize that the Jesus of the New Testament was the lawgiver of the Old Testament. It's not a different, set of standards there. And so the right of self-defense goes back to the very first man, and to take that right away is just, it's a power play. It's a desire to control. What is behind any gun control laws has nothing to do with them. It has to do with surrender. It has to do with somebody trying to control you. And that is, and this is a, I don't think this is a minor issue, this idea of gun control and gun rights. This is a major issue, because what a people believes about life, it tells us, I mean, the how people treat the Second Amendment tells me a lot about how they view life. And we live in a culture of death, and the problem is not the guns. It's not the guns that create it.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, as illustrated here, you know, we were talking in the New Testament about swords, and of course back then, but in the next segment we're going to talk about a little bit more about assault weapons, what they are and what they are not. But, you know, the history here is that, in fact, you know, something I wanted to get back to, you mentioned the Second Amendment says to keep and to bear. Okay, and I think a lot of people are just absolutely confused about what it means to bear arms, because not only does it mean to be able to carry it, and yours, in my opinion, obviously, whether that's open or concealed, I think that bear doesn't only mean to have it upon your person, you able to bear it that way, but I think it means to bring to bear, which means to actually use it. Not just simply keep it as a trophy hanging on the wall, as some people would have us believe.
No, that's exactly right. When you look at the context, people have done all kinds of stuff with the Second Amendment, and those who try to say, "Well, that's only for the militia," well, it doesn't say that's for the people. And if you read through the document, when they say people, they mean people. They don't mean a body of people like a militia. They mean the right of the individual to keep and bear arms. You cannot restrict somebody from protecting themselves. And here's the other thing, Randy, to bring up current things. Our president, who wants to take away our guns, is selling them to our enemies.
I think that's something.
He's selling them to our enemies. And I think in many cases they're being given away. Arm the terrorist, in his words. They call them terrorists. Arm them. And then disarm the American citizen. It is an absolute joke. It's disgusting, and every American should be wary of this and fight for this. This is a key issue.
Right. Well, not only that, but there's such hypocrisy by our government in this whole thing. And of course, we don't have time to go down that whole Fast and Furious thing where, you know, the United States was caught selling weapons to cartels, you know, and the enemy. So, I mean, it's right there. It's in your face. So, well, thank you very much, Dan, for being here. I know you got to run and take care of some family matters there. Appreciate you being here. And, folks, this kind of brings us to a conclusion of our first segment. Stay with us, and we'll be right back for segment two of Constitutionally Correct. Welcome back to our second segment of Constitutionally Correct, and today we're talking about the issue of gun control, and we're during this episode, actually, we're actually taking a little bit more of a historical look at it because I think people need to understand the principles and all of that. For some reason, Larry Pratt was not able to make it with us. I haven't been able to communicate with him to find out what happened. And folks, you're kind of stuck with me, the Fluffy Bunny, and Chris Shipler for the remainder of the show. But I think we've got some great things for you. Stick with us because it gives you some premise, some ammunition, if you will, to fire at those who would challenge why our founding fathers decided that it was so important to have a well-armed citizenry. And I'm not – notice I said a well-armed citizenry. You know, a part of the argument, especially with the Second Amendment, I've heard this, well, we should just leave the weapons up to the militia. And, you know, most people are actually, in their mind, they're associating the word militia with typically with the National Guard, which, quite frankly, when the Founding Fathers created the Constitution and, of course, the Bill of Rights, there was no such thing as a quote-unquote National Guard. The reason they've had to come up with this idea of a National Guard, which is a state-run militia, so to speak, is because they have an unconstitutional standing army for the, well, since World War II. And so in trying to, you know, overcome some of these constitutional problems, they give us other things to that and make people believe that it is something that it's not. But here's why we have to really understand the premise and the reason why it's so important to understand the principles. And I want to read to you from the Declaration of Independence, one of the clauses that most people are very well, at least somewhat aware of. I don't know if they really have taken a look at and understand it, but the words begin with, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator," which, folks, an endowment is a gift, hello, "by our Creator, with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And, of course, the Bill of Rights takes that same list, life, liberty, and changes that pursuit of happiness to property. Something that's a little bit more tangible than just simply the pursuit of happiness. But it goes on to say, and here's the important thing, folks, that I really want you to hear, that to secure these rights, all right, what rights are those? The unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Now, it doesn't just say that, and it doesn't stop there, doesn't, because if we just simply stop there, we could say, okay, Hitler and Stalin and all these other tyrannical leaders have been just in instituting government among men. But no, it does not stop there. It says deriving their just powers from the consent. What does that mean? Their permission of the governed. That whenever a form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. Folks, the reason we have a government in these United States is to secure our God-given, those endowed rights, our God-given endowed rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or as the Fourth Amendment would say, property, or the Fifth Amendment would say, property. We have a right to protect our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property. We have that right, and these governments are here to protect that right of self-preservation. So I just wanted to make sure we put that out there because it is in the context of the Declaration of Independence that we got our Constitution. So with that in mind, I know the the fluffy bunny is here itching to delve a little bit more into this. So go ahead there, Fluffy.
Yeah, just to give a bit of more of a historical perspective here, one thing to remember when the Constitution was being created, there was a huge battle going on basically between two schools of thought. One was arguing for a stronger federal government, and the other side was arguing for states' rights. And the Constitution is really a compromise between those two positions, the strength of the federal government versus the actual, you know, individual liberty of each sovereign state. And a lot of what came out of when they're trying to ratify the Constitution was, you know, the oral duels going on between the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist, which essentially is the idea of those advocating for the Constitution and a stronger form of a federal government and those advocating for states' rights. And one of the big arguments at that point in time was over the idea that we were not supposed to have a standing army, as the Gunny just pointed out, but the idea that the states were the militia, and that was where the people would be protected, was by the states actually being the army, each state having their own militia group, their own army, and that was considered very, very important by the Anti-Federalist as one of the few guarantees you had about, you know, usurpation of power by the federal government. And that was one of the huge, really tremendous fireballs that was going through at that time of the arguments going on during the Constitutional Convention and then once again during the ratification process that went on out there. And Madison was advocating out for the Constitution, the stronger federal government, and he wrote a response in the famous Federal 46. And his response to that was, besides the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached and by which the militia officers are appointed forms a barrier against the enterprise of ambition more insurmountable than any which a simple government of any form can admit of. So what he was actually saying is, by allowing the people to keep and bear arms, that became the real power that would keep the federal government from overflowing and taking over the states. And that's not what has happened today. We've allowed the standing army up there and the federal government to have so much power that the states are being put into a subordinate position to them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this is you know, actually the battle we're having right now is over the idea. They're talking about disarming the citizenry at this point in time.
Yep.
And which is, you know, absolutely ludicrous. And we understand now from a historical perspective that's not correct. And the question becomes, what are we, the people, you know, going to do to actually fight to keep our rights for self-preservation? And the reality comes down to very simply, the reason there is a Second Amendment is to allow we the people to not only fight our own government, but to fight, you know, for our country and our families against any invading armies.
Absolutely.
That's really what it all comes down to, is it was put in the hands of we the people to be able to defend ourselves. And one of the most powerful tools we actually still have left is using the liberals' own weapon against them. And that is every liberal's favorite amendment to the Constitution, the 14th Amendment. And what the liberals have done over the past, about 20 years, is they've interpreted the 14th Amendment, and the courts have stood by this, as taking the rights that are in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, and that they are being forced down to the states, so that the amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, are no longer being interpreted as a limit on the federal government, but they're saying that through the 14th Amendment, that the Bill of Rights actually is forced down to the states, and the states also have to adhere to those limits that were imposed on the federal government by our Bill of Rights. And as we all know, our Second Amendment is part of the Bill of Rights. And so by the logic of the actual liberals who claim that all those restrictions in the Bill of Rights are forced now on the states, and the states have to adhere to them, which when the Constitution was created, they did not have to. It was just a restriction on the federal government. The liberals' own logic and their case history says the Bill of Rights has to go down to the states, and the states have to enforce our Bill of Rights. Well, the Second Amendment is in there. And that is the argument that people should be using, because either the liberals are wrong about their interpretation of the 14th Amendment, or they're correct in their interpretation. Naturally, they think they're correct, in which case the Second Amendment applies to the states, and you are not going to be able to have cities that disarm the citizenry. And that is absolutely the most powerful tool we still have left, because it is the leftist own tool. They claim everything hangs on that 14th Amendment.
Right. Well, here's a real interesting thing, and to give even more strength to that is the fact that if that was true, and that's obviously those of us here believe that it is not true, but even if it was true, the Illinois State Constitution, this is real interesting because it goes back to defining who the militia is. The Illinois State Constitution, Article 12, which is titled The Militia, the very first paragraph defines who the militia is. And guess who the militia is there, Fluffy?
We the people.
Every able-bodied person. Now, that's everybody. So, you know, those folks who want to say, hey, look, only the militia should have the arms. I'm like, hey, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Only the militia should have the right to keep and bear arms. And what's interesting is not only does the Illinois State Constitution say every able-bodied person is a member of the militia, but the Second Amendment itself expresses who the militia is. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people shall not be infringed to keep and bear those arms. So it makes that very specific connection within the Second Amendment itself. It doesn't just say a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, only the militia should have the right to keep and bear arms. It does not say that. It says the militia being necessary, it says then the right of the people. Okay, so it makes a very, very strong connection between who the militia is. It's the people according to this, and of course the preamble, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Okay, it's we, those same people they're referring to in the Second Amendment is exactly the same people it's referring to in the preamble. There is no change in definition here, people. This whole convoluted definition, oh, well, it might mean just the militia or what. No! Nowhere does that definition change. We the people. You made the statement, Fluffy. We the people. And it's absolutely true. We the people. We the citizens of this country. Well, you know, back before the 14th Amendment, there was no such thing as a citizen of this country. We the people, the citizens of our individual states, have the right to keep and bear arms.
Woo. Amen, brother. Of course, we do know in Illinois, our Constitution also says that we're supposed to have a balanced budget. And of course, you know, we're running basically the second worst budget in the country, where we're basically bankrupt because we do not have a balanced budget.
Right.
And they do claim that English is the official language of Illinois, the state that prints everything in Spanish.
Yep. Well, we're about to end with our time, but, you know, while there was that great part about the Illinois State Constitution defining who the militia is, there's also some evil within the Constitution because, and I quote, subject to the police power. It's Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois State Constitution. Subject to the police power, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, folks, that's all the time we got for this segment. Stay with us, and we'll be right back as we take a look a little bit about what the history is behind the assault weapons. Welcome back to our third and final segment. And, folks, I apologize. I'm not sure what happened. Larry Pratt was not able to join us today. But this issue of our rights to protect ourselves is so vitally important. I wanted to give you some history here and some perspective and some ammunition to fire at those who would want to rob us of our God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or as the Fifth Amendment says, property. But one of the things, in fact, we just kind of discussed that a little bit, how people want to twist the definition and the meaning of these terms as to what a militia is. And in upcoming shows, in fact, we may do a back-to-back if we have some time here, but to talk about what a constitutional militia really looks like. We'll take a look at that because it's so important to understand the principles and the relevance of these principles, folks. I realize this document was written a couple hundred years ago, but hey, guess what? They were built upon timeless principles, and we've allowed this government and the people who are quote-unquote speaking on behalf of the government to define the terms. And so we're going to take a look here in just a second what these assault weapons are. Everybody's all wrapped around the idea of an assault weapon. And so with us here is Chris Shipler, who has done quite a little bit of research on this. And I want to turn the matter of discussion over to the idea of what an assault weapon is. What are they really talking about here, Chris?
Well, the biggest thing that they're doing is they're trying to identify weapons that can cause mass carnage in a short period of time. So if you look at the assault weapon ban that came across in the 90s, it was really a ridiculous concept. You know, they wasted a lot of time and energy on trying to identify components of a semi-automatic, which is one pull of the trigger, one bullet, with components on the gun that made it more dangerous, like a pistol grip, which is ridiculous. A flash suppressor, which is ridiculous. The big one that they like to go after is the large clips, which you know as a Marine, and I know, and anybody who's ever handled a magazine, I'm sorry to mean to say clip, a magazine knows that, you know, it takes a second or less to swap a clip or magazine out. So if you have 10 rounds, 30 rounds, 50 rounds, you know, you can still have a fairly continuous firing environment. So what they try to do is they try to...
Hey, can I interrupt you just a second? Just to let people know, part of the Marine Corps rifle qualification is the rapid fire qualification. And in that qualification, you have 1 minute to fire off 10 rounds to get a high score. And so you have a fairly small target, and they give you the go. You've got a magazine of five rounds, and then you got a magazine of five rounds. Either that or it's 10 and 10. It's been a while since I've been on the range. But the idea is you've only got 1 minute. You push the button, the magazine drops, you pull the other one out, and you've already got your magazine pouch already opened up, set, so you can just grab that magazine, pop it up there, and continue firing. So just so people understand, there's actually training with that idea. You don't put the weapon on automatic and do a spray because, quite frankly, just spraying bullets are very ineffective, and you very rarely hit a whole lot. So the idea is to actually rapid fire with well-aimed, well-placed rounds and to be able to drop that magazine, pop it up there. It takes a second, two at max.
Yeah, and it's not just that, Randy. I've posted multiple videos of experts both with semi-auto handguns and with semi-auto carbines or rifles. And I've seen guys disprove the whole idea of a large magazine where a guy took multiple magazines with one bullet in it, and he could swap, switch, cock, fire, you know what I'm saying, chamber, and move at an incredible speed. Anybody who's trained knows, and I come from the revolver background because in Alaska with Bear, your handgun was your backup because when you run out with a rifle on a charging Bear, you know, you pull your handgun. Well, in my day, you know, you had your 44 Magnum. It was a revolver. We didn't have semi-auto, you know, weapons in those days. And so you had a six-shooter. Well, we carried what's called speed loaders, and we would go to the range, and we would fire off six shots effectively, you know, accurately, as quick as possible, kick that chamber open, drop the shell, slam in a speed loader, you know, and go back to firing, because it was life or death, you know, based on the speed and the amount of lead you could effectively put into that charging 1,200-pound bear. And the same thing goes for, you know, combat situation, is you're only going to have so many bullets in a gun, period. And so you have to be able to move to the next load. And this is so important because they love to scare people. And another thing they talk about with assault rifles and the scare tactic, which is mind-boggling to me, number one, very seldom are they used. It's usually handguns that are used in most gun-related murders and things like that in this country. And shotgun is one of the top ones. A shotgun is typically, if it's a 12-gauge pump, a short barrel, it's 8 rounds. And the guns that these guys carry are small caliber, low magazine loads, 6-8 rounds. They're not walking around with Glock with 15 plus rounds in it most of the time. They're very small, easily concealed weapons. You could make an argument on a point, but the point is that is not the weapon of choice. It has been in a couple of these massacres. Unfortunately, there wasn't somebody there with a gun to take them out. The argument is wrong.
Right.
You know, if you take away rifles or carbines, they still are going to have guns and the ability to reload the gun and kill more people if those people are unarmed and unable to defend themselves, like those
right.
brave teachers did, by throwing their bodies in front of a bullet instead of being able to pull out and be trained and take the guy down. It's
right.
an embarrassment that this conversation is going on.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. You know, last night we were talking, and I was incorrect when I told you you were right. But because I went out on the FBI website.
I didn't want to tell you that.
Well, thank you for not embarrass me too bad. But it would have been okay. I could have swallowed it. The thing is that, you know, firearms are, you know, the number one use of murder weapons. And, of course, the second at about one-eighth of all of those attacks are done by knives or cutting instruments. But here's the real interesting thing. The third in that thing is personal weapons of hands, fist, and feet. And so, you know, I'm just kind of curious.
That means I'm an assault weapon, Randy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, as a matter of fact, I think we have online with us a guy who can attest to this, the Fluffy Bunny. What is your assault weapon of choice?
That would be my hands.
Yeah.
and folks, for you, those that you don't who don't know it, the Fluffy Bunny is actually a martial arts expert, and so you know, fast as lightning and all of that. You know, the choice of weapons there, and that's amazing. Out of all of the in the stats, the FBI stats, the third biggest assault weapon: hands, feet, and fist. And
number one is bladed weapons.
Yeah,
well, that's actually number two.
Number two to guns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Let me tie, because fellow martial artists can have this conversation. We used to train continually where somebody, we would have our partner attack us either with a blunt instrument, which is number four on the list, you know, like a club or a bat or whatever. We also trained with knives, you know, unarmed combat against an assailant that attacked us with knives. And we also trained with where a guy would pull a gun on us at close range, and we would move in to disarm that man and take him out. And if you talk to my son, which I would love to get on these shows, because he's, you know, he's a recent combat vet, plus he's doing all this, you know, the training and the handgun stuff. That's his big thing now. And they also, they did a lot of, you know, breaking in doors, searching for bad guys in Iraq. And he said, you never stood close to a guy trying to hold a gun on a guy. You always made sure you had distance because, you know, you were at a disadvantage if the guy could get his hand on your gun and divert the barrel, because you have to actually The bullet has to strike the human being. It only takes a fraction of a second to divert that aim and move in on somebody.
Right.
You know, and I've always known this in martial arts, that I'd almost rather you have a club coming at me, because you're focused on one weapon, which means I have all of my hands, feet, knees, elbows, and whatever I have. I have multiple weapons, and you're focused on one, which means all your attention is that weapon. So all I have to do is get my hands on that weapon or divert you, and I have control of your body, correct or incorrect, Fluffy Bunny?
Well, that's pretty well essentially correct. It's the standard rule has been, if you can see the opponent's weapon, he probably doesn't know how to use it.
Bingo.
Yeah, well,
I love that one.
and you know, to further this, you know, I've said this before. I have a baseball bat that's sitting right next to my door. If somebody wants to assault, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to, you know, unholster a gun and bring it to bear if somebody's, you know, about to threaten you and break down your door. Look, I've got a baseball bat there. And guess what? As soon as I take that baseball bat to protect myself, guess what it becomes?
Assault weapon.
An assault weapon. It doesn't have a pistol grip. It doesn't have a magazine. You know, it becomes an assault weapon. And I'll guarantee you, I could probably get that weapon and, number one, that baseball bat, and knock that gun out of your hand. And guess what the next step is? Your brain your brain housing group becomes mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you this, it will be unequivocal about what instrument was used. Because at the near the end of the business end of the baseball bat is the Marine Corps emblem. It was one of these gifts I got when I was on recruiting duty. And so there will be an indelible mark of the Marine Corps emblem on your forehead when I bring this weapon to bear.
You know, and can I throw this in? This is, I think, an important topic.
Yeah, go ahead. We got just a minute and 50 seconds left of this.
Okay. You know that I've been doing all this research on all these massacres, and I've also got into other countries because of it. And I'm all the way back to 1927, where the largest still to date mass murder in a school was a guy who blew stuff up. He was a farmer who had access to chemicals and could get his hands on dynamite. So he killed his wife, blew up his home, then he went to the school and blew it up, and then he committed suicide by a bomb. And they actually found more bombs that he did not detonate. It would have been worse, but that was the worst in our country. But if you go to the recent occurrence that nobody likes to talk about, the guy in China who stabbed 23 children at a primary school, stabbed them, not a gun. And then you go to one where countries where they don't have guns, or they have strong gun laws, a guy decided to kill a bunch of kids, students and teachers, with a flamethrower. He built it and went into broke into the school and burned people to death. So evil men will find a way to do their evil deeds. And all you're doing by invoking these laws and creating these gun-free zones is you're telling good people that they can't protect themselves, their family, or their fellow man. That's really the bottom line with this.
Right. Well, folks, that's all the time we got for this particular episode. We've got a lot more information to cover. There's a lot more history. There's a lot more facts, stats, and all of this that we need to bring out here so that you are well-armed with information, as well as well-armed with the knowledge that you have a right, a God-given right, to protect yourself, regardless of the choice of arsenal to do so. So stay with us, folks, and hopefully next week we'll have Larry Pratt find out what happened, and we'll be interviewing Larry, because he said that he would love to be on the show, so I'm not sure what preempted it. There's probably some other big stuff boiling out there, but stay with us, folks, and join us for another exciting episode of Constitutionally Correct.